Let's get it.
In the city, we gon' slide. Bet I be there pronto.
Me, my guys, we really lie. Lord, forgive me, pay my tithes. Please don't have me reach inside. In the center console. Keep the semi when I ride. Lit off Henny when I drive. In the city, we gon' slide. Bet I be there pronto.
Hey, we in there. Pronto. This is the Chop Up Show. Y'all know what's good. I am Damo, the political plug. It's another Thursday. We're here to converse with y'all. It's my favorite day of the week. And it's my favorite day of the week because who am I here with?
Hey, it's your girl Toya G here with my brothers. Keeping it cool with y'all, but not just them. Y'all in the comments, y'all watching live. Anybody listening to the show after the fact. Thank y'all for tuning in whenever you're catching the Chop Up Show. We definitely appreciate y'all. Somebody said they follow Consciously at The Consciously. But they want to know where to follow us. At Toya G is where you can find me. At The Political Plug is where you can find Odamo over there in the corner. We want you to stay tapped in with us. Higher Definition LEC at Higher Definition LEC on Instagram is also another place you will see my smiling face. And I got a couple things I want to share with you. So go tap in with me over there as well.
Tap in. Hey, and you really want to tap in with Toya because she's going to always be able to give you some, I feel like, leadership and wellness in a way that is like a real textual with some flavor. You know, it's me, George Lee, a.k.a. Consciously. Don't forget the Lee, theconsciouslee.com, georgeleespeaks.com. Both of those websites is where you can, you know, tap in with me if you want to figure out a way to book me, find out some merch, learn more about myself, things I got coming your way. That's where you at. Today we got a nice conversation coming our way about a few things. We know a lot of people have been talking about Elon Musk and Twitter. You know, that's what we're getting in first. Yes. And, you know, I ain't even going to give you, I feel like y'all seeing the title of this right here we'll be getting into, but we're going to get into it, Damo.
Hey, real quick, can I, you know, we are out here, before we switch over to that chop, I wanted to kind of plug, I got a little agenda real quick. I got some young people who are under my tutelage, under my leadership, who are working hard to advocate for issues that I think we will find important. So I want to kind of give them some shout out real quick, too. My students, Harut and Javier, are working hard in the mix of the conversation, and they're students at Cal State Fullerton, to advocate for adjunct professors. We know that adjunct professors across the country have been fighting hard to make sure that they get paid correctly, to make sure that their labor is appreciated. If you don't know what an adjunct professor is, it's the type of professor that doesn't always have an office on campus, usually doesn't have a master's or a PhD, or they usually have a master's but not a PhD. Yeah. And so they don't have tenure, they don't have a lot of stability. They got to work at a bunch of different campuses. So they're being run ragged in order to pay their bills. They teaching and supplying a lot of those general education courses and a lot of that tutoring, a lot of that counseling, a lot of that advising from a graduate level or from an adjunct level that students need to stay in the university, stay in the system. And basically they being run ragged. So what I need for y'all to do is go, I'm about to put a website of an article in the comments. I need y'all to click this link, okay? I need y'all to check them out. I need y'all to holler at them and support their efforts to support the adjunct professors here in the UC and the CSU system in the state of California, because we wanted to make a pattern and to make a statement on labor that can reverberate across the country. Okay, so that's my thing. Y'all gonna see a little link pop up in the comments. We're gonna turn it back over to the plug. But when y'all see that link in the comments,
click the link.
I need y'all to click the link. I need y'all to read the article. I need y'all to support the cause. All right, shout out to y'all. Turn it back over to the plug. Hey, we out here.
All right, so with that being said, we can go ahead and get into the Snapchat, get the conversation started. So the most interesting thing in social media and tech right now is the fact that Elon Musk has purchased Twitter. And it was for a pretty penny, $44 billion. So a lot of interesting things going on with that, though, because the question is Twitter even worth $44 billion? So... getting the conversation started. the idea associated with Elon Musk and purchasing Twitter is that he has an issue with free speech and how free speech is functioning. Now, ironically, the question of free speech and even how Elon Musk is playing with it is very Western, right? Like even in the conversation of freedom of speech is something that's uniquely found in our Constitution in the United States, right? And so I guess we can get the conversation started like this. What is the impact of another billionaire purchasing another major social media site? Does that help freedom of speech? Is it a gas mask, a smoke screen? How is it really going down? Lee, let's start with you, bro.
Definitely a smoke screen. when rich people start talking about freedom of speech, I don't know what that mean particularly, because it's like, hey, you ain't got too much speech being restricted and you got the platform to say what you want to say, how you want to say, when you want to say it, and the consequences is usually not freedom or death. So I don't know what you're talking about of freedom of speech. For Elon Musk, I know that I have to look at it to make sure I got the number right. He had told the UN that he would solve world hunger if they gave him a business plan on how they would spend the $6 billion. The UN sent him the receipts of how they would spend the $6 billion. And he ain't said nothing to him. I looked it up. It's six.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
$6 billion. I'm about to make, that's why I had to like look it up. I looked it up. $6 billion. Make sure it's $6 billion. You know what I'm saying? And he didn't come through. So I'm just thinking about, like, you know, like you said, the value of Twitter compared to solving world hunger is just like, yeah.
I mean, what is that? And again, y'all know a term that we throw around here that I like to throw around specifically is neoliberal, right? And so it's like this idea of you got $6 billion that the UN is saying we can solve hunger with. You throw $44 billion at Twitter to save freedom of speech. Niggas prior, like the priorities from is just out of whack. What you think, Toya? Impact? Are we dealing with a smoke screen? Is he really saving freedom of speech?
I mean, he's clearly definitely not saving freedom of speech. One of the things I think we've all commonly been taught about is that all of these mysterious, powerful figures behind the curtains are the ones controlling our perception and our understanding of reality, because all these rich people control our media platforms. And so, you know, I think it's more of the same. I think it's just more insidious, because there is more money moving around and more stake and more investment in doing so. I think the more intriguing thing is not that people want to get into the marketplace of ideas and to champion free speech. I think it is who is doing it and why they're doing it and when they're doing it that really becomes very interesting. We are in a society where social media, as much as it is criticized, has been a portal and a platform for people to control what they consume, control how they understand their perception. They're able to design and curate a timeline to have the version of reality that they would like to prefer to live in, as opposed to sitting down to the 10 o'clock news and getting what you think, you know, what society or what the people in power figure they need to know. So in some ways, it's kind of like, I'm gonna call it, for lack of a better term, some fuckery, right? So it plays on the mind, because you
passed the first 2 minutes, so you get it.
Some fuckery.
Hey, with these social media platforms, the way we're able to design the news makes it feel like you are developing, you know, a version of the truth that resonates with you. But the filter that is coming through still starts from somewhere. It still starts from the top, and the nozzle of that is still from people who want to control media. So real quick, to answer your question too, I came across this tweet that was very enlightening in terms of who controls media. And it said this, and this blew my mind. The richest guy on the 2021 Forbes 400 list owns the Washington Post. Number two now owns Twitter. Number three owns Facebook. Numbers five and six started Google. Numbers four and nine started Microsoft. Number 10 owns Bloomberg. Free speech, you decide. Right? So when you start
Mm-hmm. To be clear, okay, so let's. I just want to be able to attach the facts. You're saying that out of the top 10 richest people in the world,
mm-hmm.
how many of those top 10 own some form of major media, whether social or traditional?
Six.
Six. I mean, no, I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The only number that is not represented is number 7 in the list that I just presented you. The only person.
So nine.
In media.
So nine of the richest 10 people own mm-hmm. some form of either traditional or social media.
And I really want y'all, I'm going to run through this list one more time, because I really want y'all to understand these big major components that fuel and shape the way that we understand information and free speech. The Washington Post, one of the hell, Jeff Bezos, by the way, is the person who owns the Washington Post.
He bought that recently, to be clear. He bought that recently.
And made a commitment, unlike Elon Musk, to be completely uninvolved and unattached, no influence on the way that news flows. But sure, right? And if y'all listen to this and y'all can't see me, I'm doing a little mm-hmm, wink, 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 because I don't buy that either. You're not finna
say that. That wink was specifically for the podcast crowd. Exactly. Shout out to those live watching.
Well, Washington Post, then you got number two with Twitter, number three, clearly Mark Zuckerberg over at Facebook, five and six started Google, don't know their names. numbers 4 and 9 started Microsoft. So that's Bill Gates, and whoever started Microsoft with him don't know his name. And then number 10, Owen Bloomberg, don't know who that is. However.
I know the list I'm looking at right here got Jeff Bezos, Amazon founder. He worth $156 billion. He bought the Washington Post for $250 million. John Henry, he owns the, he owns the trading firm JW and Henry & Co. He's worth $2.5 billion. He bought the
You said that he, so Jeff Bezos, who, because he recently bought the Washington Post, to be clear.
Yeah.
Because the accusation was he did it as a flex to Donald Trump. You know, because a lot of the beef that Donald Trump was having with the Washington Post, you said it was for $250 million. Twitter was recently purchased by Elon Musk for $44 billion.
The only difference is that is a tech media, so you got to put that in terms of the price. And I feel like am I got a little lag?
But yeah, a little bit.
Keep
talking through it.
But I guess like. That it's that much of a gap between social media and traditional media that the Washington Post was purchased for a couple hundred million, and Twitter alone goes for billions. I mean, to transition the conversation though, because George, you were saying that it was something specifically like what was the issue that individuals owning these major media platforms?
You know, I've been trying to get my financial literacy up. So I know that Wall Street Trapper and Ernie Leisure was talking about how when you're trying to invest in a company and the board members are not the main stakeholders in that company, it's probably not really a good company to invest in. And thinking about how in terms of just authority and power and control, how you have one individual that can control literally the entirety of the company, you know. How that's bad, and how usually it's like a multiple people that own tech companies and media companies, and not just, you know, just one person, or at least in the terms of Twitter. You feel me?
I don't understand it, because it's like saying that, like, if you're talking about a board, like saying that, like, the difference between a board owning it and then like Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk independently owning it, like, it's really just splitting hairs. It's like whether or not we got an issue with one billionaire as opposed to six billionaires, you know what I mean, sitting on a board making a difference. Toya, do you believe that it poses a unique difference in having one individual own a major shares in a social media platform or a tech platform as opposed to the board operating in control of a social media platform?
I mean, the question is, like, okay, so your question is, does it make a significant difference, or is one better than the other? I mean, I don't really know. I mean, sure, I don't really know how governing those spaces work, because a lot of times people on boards, the way that I understand boards to work is that you can function in an advisory capacity but have no desire to really kind of have a stake in the company. Like, so, I mean, I think some of the ways that the infrastructure of corporations eludes me, so I don't want to overstep and kind of speak to that. I think, you know, you can have six whack ass people in control of it and it still be just as bad, you know what I'm saying? So yeah. I don't really know. At that point, it's kind of like splitting hairs if they all on the same page, got the same agenda and the same intentions. I think, you know, we look at the selling of Twitter in the first place from being a public brand or whatever to being something privately owned. You see that the even the creators and the owners of Twitter had something to negotiate. There was a price that they were willing to sell in order to relinquish power over one of the most influential platforms. So it stopped being about principle. It stopped being about, you know, engineering and being at the front of innovation. And it started being about the highest seller and the highest bidder. And a month ago, we was having conversations laughing at Elon Musk's face about the possibility of buying Twitter. And, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
That was about red pills and, yeah, all type of shit. And just
My answer to your question is mostly, I don't know how that should work at the top. But what I do know is if you have a vested interest either in yourself or in some larger political or ideological ideal, you don't get enough people on your side to push that mission forward, whether it's you or whether it's six. You know what I'm saying? Weird decisions get made when you get people. What they say in the church where two or three are gathered, except for in this particular example, he might not be in the midst. I really don't know. We have to see. Right. But I think that's something fair to say.
And to me, as the last thing I said about this particularly, right, to me, I think it adds to the current trend that we see of billionaires, like the list we just got done, you know what I'm saying, listing of owning media uniquely and how media is a part of the world that we're in. Because I agree, there's always been billionaires that own shit. You see what I'm saying? But now this new power grab for like tech and media and how those and how you get the control, you feel me? Mm-hmm. The narrative. And what we see and what we don't see on timelines, to me, that's starting to become it is. And I'm trying to figure out why I'm still lagging. It's bothering me so much.
I understand it, but so, what's your perspective? That's all that matters.
Right, yeah. It ain't much of a lag on my end, but I mean, on this story, I do think that, and if y'all got anything else to add, I'll say this. I do think that when we understate the impact of, again, knowing that somebody is claiming that they can solve world hunger for $6 billion, knowing that that $6 billion was available, but it was added to $44 billion to buy a social media company.
Well, here, you know what I mean? There's some interesting, I mean, folks in the comments are like, specifically Charles and Alicia. We're kind of saying the same thing. Charles said, why are we looking for a single billionaire to end world hunger when as a country we spend billions on other shit? It would definitely be nice for Buddy to help, but that ain't his job. Alicia, I'm assuming, followed up and said that's unfair to say that his priorities are out of whack. Of course, his priorities as a billionaire are different from the 98%. I'm assuming they change as our wealth grows, or just has they changed as the wealth grows. And so, I don't know. Go ahead.
Can you go back to old boy? Go back to old boy real quick. Charles said, why are we looking for a single billionaire to end world hunger? Because he can, bro. Because he can.
My thing is not even that he can, because there's a lot of shit I could do, but I don't do. But it's that I feel like I play my part in other ways socially. I do things to contribute. This is somebody who don't pay taxes. So do something. You get to evade and elude a lot of the common breakoffs that would account for your contributions. If you was carrying an equal load or doing an equal job or it felt like you were being appropriately kind of, but you do a lot of shit from the treatment of your Black employees at your private company to your ability to evade taxes the same way as some of your arch nemesis like Jeff Bezos, like Donald Trump. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, we want you to foot the bill on world hunger. Because you don't have to do shit else, and you make it and set it up that way, and we tie.
Not only that, we're not pulling out this billionaire thing and putting it to Elon Musk uniquely out the blue. There is a context and history of Elon Musk individually himself voluntarily being like, yeah, if y'all give me the spending plan for how y'all gonna spend this $6 billion, I will give it to y'all. He said that. He didn't follow through what it is. You see what I'm saying? The only thing I want to throw in here too, just to make sure we're clear on, because I just got done doing a lecture on this like 2 weeks ago, how we've been indoctrinated to understand freedom of speech, that only applies to the federal government and to government to state. It does not apply to private entities or private space. So to me, I see it as this gaslighting is that you have the team around you and the resources around you for your ass to know better and recognize what freedom of speech is and what it ain't. So for you to get on Twitter and gaslight all these people and act like you know what's going on, because what I see from the comment section here and what I know from having conversations on social media, it's a lot of people that really don't know or have a very surface level understanding about a lot of these concepts like freedom of speech. So it's like, yeah, man.
This is the same way. I mean, you know, we get HIPAA. You get some legalese. You get some language, and all of a sudden, you think you know how it works, and then half the people running around talking about HIPAA don't know about HIPAA. So it's a great example of how we self-aggrandize ourselves and appoint ourselves to be scholars in these areas where we're trying to have these conversations, and that's just not our lane or jurisdiction most of the time.
Hey, but I mean, I'm gonna be honest. I'm not giving anybody the pass of you if. The claim is made that we can address world hunger with $6 billion. And that's a feasible number. Like, if a motherfucker say, bro, you can take care of your family, like, you are somebody that makes $200 million a year. And you can take care of everybody with your last name and the people connected to them for $3 million a year. And you choose to take your 200 something million and then go spend it on land or whatever. Something that's gonna be valuable, right? Because we can't deny the value of Twitter. But to really deny the responsibility of being able to fend for that many, for such a large group of people, and still instead use that. This is listen, I'm a preacher about neoliberalism till I die, because this is the problem with our lives.
Let me throw something in real fast too. Just throw something in, I'd be simple to be quick. We don't have the same energy or the same, you know, standard when it comes to how we're spending money. Think about the outrage right now we have for BLM spending $6 million on the mansion. To me, I feel like it's just a lot of just a kind of selective moral outrage when it comes to spending money, especially too, because to me, just when you think about it, those two statements, with all respect, it's really got like some bootlicking, you feel me, remnants of it. You know what I'm saying? Where it's really like now you're a caping for billionaires in a way that literally helps filter a lot of the shit that we're talking about right now. Because it's like now it's like you don't have that responsibility to do X, Y, and Z and X, Y, and Z. But it's like, if you don't have that responsibility, then who does? You have the ability to influence policymaking process. You have the ability to get bureaucracies and lobbyists and interest groups. You have the ability to get government subsidies and get tax breaks. So when we've been footing the bill for Tesla, shit, we see in 2012, you know what I mean? He had a $2 billion net worth, and now he got $200 billion net worth. We as taxpayers help him get that. So to me, it's like when you start talking about priorities and fairness, it's like, where is priorities and fairness for the 98% that y'all, you know what I'm saying, distinctively talked about, acknowledged in the comment? Think differently. Yeah, think differently as in we're going to exploit your ass and be like, yeah, I'm going to do what I want to do with my money and shut up for you if you don't like it. We don't have that same energy for anybody else, especially poor people.
But I think... Go ahead. Because I was going...
Respond to that, because there's something actually in the comments that I wanted to kind of get to. So,
No. I feel like what George said, I don't really think it clashed, though, because it's like the idea is simply that there's a responsibility that's there, but we can both agree that based on what's important, like the logic of capitalism, that's not like solving world hunger doesn't add to that. It doesn't increase that benefit. There's no incentive to do that. Specifically, when you can spend $44 billion to flip that to 100, you know what I mean. So that's why I want you to go ahead.
Well, the only thing that I wanted to kind of go back to, and this is something that's in the comments, Charles is saying or mentioning that the government has these responsibilities, not private citizens. And then Alicia comes back and asks the question, "I want to know what the amount of wealth is needed for strangers to get to determine what someone else does with their money, because at every bracket, individuals could and should be spending some of their money on other things instead. So how is it that billionaires are supposed to be listening to strangers about their money?" And I get that, right? Like, there's a question about private companies, about the line or the boundary between what people are obligated to do versus what the state is obligated to do. I'm still going to go back to, you are not helping the state or supporting the state or allowing the state to do what it's supposed to if you're not paying your taxes to it. So that's kind of the first place I want to start there, even if we try to put it off on the state and put it off on whatever. And this also alludes to a very complicated and messed up system too, because we know how our government is very messed up in taxation and on taxation and allows for these tax breaks. It's not that Elon and them is like, "I'm not paying, we'll see you next year." It's literally that their tax bill is being read as zero because of the ways that tax systems are structured in this country to benefit billionaires. All of that being said, you're like, who said they gotta do this and who said they got? I'm saying they gotta do that. I'm being a lightweight communist. I feel like a huge part of what keeps this world in balance is a reliance on individuals being ethical and moral characters. Now, we understand that shit is not really, really real. We understand that the way that the world works, that everybody is always working in their general interest. But the only way we have any semblance of balance is if we have these philanthropic understandings of how we got to approach the world around us.
Talk that communism shit. Talk that socialist shit.
I call it lightweight because I don't know. And this isn't, I'm no mathematologist. I'm no economist. I don't have the lane or the jurisdiction to be like, this is the economic system. I'm not one of those to say that this is the one that's going to save the world. I just believe in a world of reality that there has to be some line. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the bright line is, but some point to where the wealth that you have that will secure your generations 10 times over. At that point, we can be like, all right, we should have to get some. Like, yeah, you don't have to
get some. Can I suggest a bright line?
Sure.
Having the ability to be able to do it. Like when you can look at a problem plaguing the world and say, I can address that problem. I can be the difference maker in the world.
In every other instance, when there's a crime or ill will happening and you have the ability to intervene and stop it and you don't, in every other instance, you've seen as an accessory to the crime because you had the ability to stop it. I know niggas right now on the stand right now, and that's the logic that they're using. So for me, it's like, what is the distinction between the billionaires and the government if the government colludes with the billionaires to sustain their profits and their wealth? Elon Musk is not the Elon Musk that we know and that we've come to understand without the government giving him the breaks that they have given him. How do we create this distinction between that's the private citizen and not the government? But the government is literally giving Tesla and saying, hey, Elon and Jeff, because you created so many jobs and you helped the government, we're going to help you. It's like, that's literally what the relationship is.
Akilah kind of threw a wrench in our logic, though, too. I do got to shout this out. Because Akilah said, we as the people have the ability to do it, but we don't do it either. So, you know, I mean, I think that's a great point. You know, we look to one person. I do. I personally do. So tell me, I think it's valid. Let's be honest. Us as global citizens, especially in the Western world, especially like, come on, let's talk about it. I think there's something valid there.
We can't compare.
We can't compare.
Like you cannot complain.
There's not a direct one-to-one relationship between these things.
To me, it is.
The logics and behaviors. Listen. The systems that these people function in, the shit rolls downhill. So we have internalized the bad habits of consumption and overconsumption as the average person. I know I do. I know there are better decisions I can make on my day-to-day basis. And I use the excuse that I don't have $6 million as a way to assuage my responsibility 9 times out of 10. Right? But I know for a fact that I have learned terrible behaviors, patterns, and logics based on what corporations have taught me, what systems I've been a part of have imprinted on me. And then I've gone on and replicated those logics in my real life. Let's be honest about that.
Yes, but
back to them, though.
I'm not saying my level of responsibility is the same as theirs. I'm saying that if we made a Venn diagram, there would be some overlap.
Think of the comment, though. We versus he. We talking about being able to mitigate us as a collective being able to do something and the power of one individual being able to stop world hunger. To me, that is the difference. You know what I'm saying? To me, that hubris is saying, like, before you start talking about them, what about what we do to each other? To me, that's the same hubris. It's like individual. To me, it's like individually we can mitigate and talk about how we buy into it, but structurally.
Let's use your analogy. Right? Whenever shit goes down, right? Whenever some shit happens intercommunally, we make sure to have the conversation that ain't no such thing as black on black violence, that it ain't no such thing, and ain't no point in that. But we always say that we do need to have family business and family meetings about the shit that we could have done better to avoid these situations. Really? We always say and be honest that when shit go down on the block, we're not finna let them over there. We're not finna let the police, the state, white folks, suburbia talk shit about what happens in the hood, but we could have put the guns down. Right, yeah. So I mean, I don't understand. Like,
the UN did their work. The UN did their work.
I can't let her do that. I'm not making a clean relationship
between these two things. I am saying you cannot be like, I'm in, but not of. Like, yeah, there is complicity.
Hold on, but it has to be understood. Don't separate out. Like, the conversation about the violence that takes place in black communities is not the same conversation of black on black violence. That's the problem. So, like, the conversation about what we do as people who adopt consumer habits is not the same. It can't even be. What is? Because I want to be clear what I'm responding to. So what are you saying, Toya? I want to be clear, because
to attempt to make differences in between what I'm saying about a billionaire's responsibility and the average person's responsibility, and that analogy was made to an understanding about violence that happens, and that happens to and betwixt certain communities, but also what needs to be happening between the members of that community. I think these are parallel conversations that albeit have some important distinctions and differences, but we're saying the same shit. What I'm saying and where we depart and disagree is you're like, no, these are two separate conversations. We can't really talk about violence that exists out there, but then also be talking about black on black crime the same way. Yes, you can. We just don't have to hold it to the same threshold or put the same level of responsibility. I'm willing to justify a 60-40 split, but there is something to be said about the complicity of everybody in world hunger. There's something to be said about almost everybody in terms of homelessness and housing and communities, whether it be showing up on local levels in your community to advocate for what local policymakers are doing on the day-to-day to fix shit in your community, whether it's showing up to participate in various forums or things that, like, there is shit that we could do. And you like, community meeting? Oh, I ain't going to that shit. I'm busy. We make decisions very flippantly every single day, and they contribute to the society that we live in. That's all I'm saying. 60-40.
Not even close. Because it's a fraction. It's literally a fraction, and it's like a fraction of a percentage. And here's why: me and my decision on whether or not I take this water bottle and put it in a recycling bin doesn't even compare to the impact. If I go down to 405 and I go to the South Bay and I see all the smokestacks and all that pollution in the air from the energy companies, that individual decision that I'm making, even collectively, if my block, if everybody, if everybody on my block decide that we not going to recycle these water bottles, it's still not going to compare to what's happening in the South Bay, in LA.
Political plug. If you had $100, and shit, you forgot about a bill hit, that bill, $65, $70. And you had to go ahead and come up off that $65, $70. So you only really had $30, $35 left, right? You only really had is that $30, $35 meaningless to you? Or is it something that you would be protective of, that you would be mindful of, that you would still count as important in the grander scheme of that 100? Like, most of it's gone. But you still, you just say, fuck the other $35, it just don't matter. It's such a small amount compared to the full
100. I think I get what you're saying, Toy. I think I get what you're saying.
Big corporations, big smokestacks in Wilmington and Long Beach, throwing up all types of pollution, airplanes, cars, all that shit. That does not make the little things that you do completely non-consequential or not contributive to the larger scheme of pollution. Like, that's just ridiculous to say. The same way that $30, $35 in your account still stands for something, even if it's the full 100. Like, let's talk about it. If you had a pizza, I could come up with 1,000 analogies.
To me, it sounds like we're getting that literally talking about saving the environment and like talking about like plastic straws. Like, we probably shouldn't use plastic straws. I can agree with using plastic straws, but in the grand scheme of things, it's like, yeah, even if the whole society go to using paper straws, when we talk about what we're talking about, you know what I'm saying, emissions and pollutions, it's like, yeah, to me, it's like we're talking about power and wealth, and we're talking about poor people have their due in terms of how wealth happens. It's like, nah, that's not how that works to me. It's like, yeah, poor people can consume better, but where do we get the consumer practices? These consumer practices didn't fall out the sky. They didn't come out the brand. Right. They came from the corporations that we're talking about have the most complicity and accountability with dealing with what we're dealing with. It's like, yeah, the consumerism that we have, those corporations benefited from it, and they colluded with the government to be able to push it, to get subsidies, to be able to do X, Y, and Z. We should go do it like that. But it's like that doesn't change what Elon Musk can do with bureaucracies and interest groups, and you know what I'm saying, like literally the policy making process. And I know that's what we all know about, and we know what it's about. Like, we can do what we want to do, but they.
And it's I look at this. If they ain't a yacht doing what they want to do, the tide gonna hit us. Cars will be doing.
But look, right. This is where it gets dangerous, though. This is where it gets dangerous, right? Because let's say I'll concede that individuals specifically working as a collective has a major impact. Mm-hmm. I'll concede.
Right? I can see that. I can see that.
He's trying to make a strategic concession. What is your
point? However, is because it has to be understood, though, that the language of the individual responsibility is uniquely used to disguise the impact of major corporations and how they, as a collective, have a larger impact of even individuals working as a collective. So you could have 15 million people recycling, making sure these plastic bottles are repurposed and don't end up in the ocean. And guess what? The deforestation in the Amazon that's dictated by 10, maybe 15 people will still have a larger impact than the 15 million people making sure that they put these in the damn recycling bin. That's what got to be understood. Yes, the question of personal responsibility and our own individual carbon footprint, our own impact on the environment is extremely important. But what ends up happening is that the conversation of personal responsibility, which is minuscule in the overall conversation of consumption, because again, the practices of consumption that we adopt come from the people that incentivize, for example, the deforestation of the Amazon. So it's dangerous. It's dangerous to start to talk about the individual when we see that individual billionaires have such a larger impact than even individuals operating as a collective of 100 million.
I don't think
we won't.
I didn't argue. I just made a statement that we don't agree. I didn't want to try to stop you. I don't feel as though we completely agree. I understand and this is clear understanding, right? When we talk about the environment, when we talk about social cause, when we talk about the social justice issues, right? The larger will always have a larger or bigger or more significant influence on the issue than the smaller fragmented pieces. I'll argue though, that the smaller fragmented pieces, oftentimes because of the way our society is designed and curated, we haven't really seen what full capacity, full strength, collective support of something looks like. Be honest. Like, what you looking at? The pandemic was a great example of how we fit in the whole project.
Yes. Everybody. Like,
it's terrible. So we can't even, I think the obvious surface level of the perception of the issue is clearly like, if you have more power in the situation and we don't have to, like, we make decisions like that. If I can make one decision as a parent for West for dinner instead of going around the room trying to figure out what everybody wants, we're going to have dinner a whole lot sooner, right? That's logical, right? So I get that component of it. What bothers me and frustrates me is that we have been so overly dependent on large institutions, large entities with powers making moves. We underestimate and have failed to explore the capacity of people working together to kind of have that brute and brunt force. It's the idea that we're not minorities. We're actually a majority, but it's the way our mind thinks. It's the way that we have perceived our perception. Welcome back, Lee.
Yeah, you're not lagging,
bro. You're not lagging, bro.
And so I'm saying all of this to say, the level where we disagree is where I think we undersell the collective capacity of people getting on the same page about some shit. I don't know if we'll ever see it. In my experience, in my 32 years on this planet, very few things from recycling. I grew up in the recycling generation. We did. You know what I'm saying? Where that was a big part of, you know, reuse. What is it? Reuse, renew, recycle.
Reduce, reuse.
Exactly. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Right? I've been a part of, you know, whole Black activism movements, right? We're in between movements of Black collectivism in it. So I've seen so many times where we have not been able to really recognize and actualize the full capacity of people working together on some shit. It's a weird refusal of that pessimism just because we've never seen what it looks like when people put their collective energy toward something. But that's all I got to say.
And my last point on it is, we're talking about wealth still though, and talking about wealth is still that top 1% on 80% of the wealth.
So even if you have 98% of the collective come, hey, we only talking about 20% of the 20% of wealth. We still talking about right now what wealth is needed to solve a hunger. And it's just like, it's even if the collective, even if you get the collective, it's like that doesn't negate that they still have the 1% still own this much wealth. So even when you have the collective come, in this instance, no metaphor, no analogy, it still is just not equitable to get what we're trying to get to. And that goes back to like the means of production and power. You should, you know what I'm saying? We only got 20% of the pie. We 98% talking about, you know what I'm saying? Probably less than 20% of the pie. Them motherfuckers, the ones that got the biggest pieces, they the ones got the big loaves that we fighting over crumbs. And I think that that's when it comes to in terms of just thinking about world hunger and how a lot of class warfare, you know what I'm saying, be getting flipped and dipped and finessed. Because to me, that's usually how they work. Like, yeah, well, you poor motherfuckers can do y'all. But now we're talking about avocado toast and not buying this. And it's like, hey, man, I can not eat avocado toast
for a long time. Like that. Yeah.
But yeah, we spent way too much time on that Snapchat. It was 43-minute Snapchat.
No, I guess the last thing I say about that is, as we transition over into the...
We had viewers. They didn't drop. They're like, y'all niggas still talking about the Twitter shit? I'm gone.
But I mean, because it's important, though.
The real ones still here. We ain't worried about the ones that's gone when the real ones are still here. That's all I'm saying. No disrespect, no tea, no shade. But shout out to y'all for rocking with us, still in the comments talking to us about this whole Twitter thing while we untangle it real quick. Y'all real.
Hey, listen. All y'all class traitors. That's all I'm going to say. Y'all class traitors. But the last thing I'll say, though, is for real, like we can't devalue or underestimate the impact of or organizing and the masses coming together to make certain demands, because we know when that takes place, change does happen. So we got to roll with that. But you know what I mean? We still gonna be at a little at odds and may set up a debate, maybe, you know what I'm saying, about this conversation, about the impact of people like Elon Musk, the responsibility of people like Elon Musk. Because as a comic book nerd, I will not end this conversation without saying with great power comes great responsibility, Uncle Ben, Marvel Comics.
Don't say that, because then I want to be petty and be like, so is Elon Musk the anti-protagonist or he's the villain? Was he the villain?
All billionaires are the villain. Fuck it. Shout out to Bernie Sanders. billionaires are the villains. Y'all know what it is. With that being said, we're going to go ahead and close out of the snapshot and go ahead and transition over to the culture chop. Toya, before we transition over to the culture chop, I want to make sure that I don't have the screen share pulled up. I didn't pull it up this time. However, y'all make sure if you have an iPhone that you are following and subscribed to the Chop Up Show on Apple Podcasts. If you are not able to catch the conversation live, or you don't like just on YouTube and you're trying to ride around and put it on your phone while you listening to your favorite podcast, make sure you put the Chop Up in rotation. That is Chop Up.
Work out. Listen to us while you work out.
You can like, you all can of that. Wherever you get your favorite podcast from, you will be able to find the Chop Up Show. So y'all make sure y'all do that. With that being said, Toya, let's go ahead and transition into the culture chop.
All right, so the culture chop for today. What's up, y'all? Just coming in. Big love to y'all. Or heading out. Definitely love the fact that y'all rock with us tonight. For the culture chop, I want to talk about generations. And that's because a lot of conversations that happen in our society, happen around us, are largely, especially right now, being viewed and broken down into generational divisions, right? Lee mentioned the avocado toast and the saving on this and that and these tips that us as millennials have been given to get ahead or to help the economy. And we all know that's a whole bunch of crock of bull when Cap is doing what Cap is doing. Cap is full of capping. And by Cap, we mean capitalism, right? So there's just a lot of, you know, weird things generationally that we have to acclimate ourselves with. The thing that inspired this, shout out to my homie Dina, if she's listening, is me and her was going back and forth about some stuff at her job, because she was talking to me about how she's like, man, these new kids is different, man. These kids, you know, these young ones, she basically is a manager. She's in charge of hiring. And she was like, I'm noticing a pattern in terms of our hires, in terms of our rates of rehiring and opening up positions and turnover and stuff like that. And she was like, man, it seemed like if you was born in the 2000s, you so quick to quit. Like, if you was born in the 2000s, you come, and if you don't like something, you angry about something, you upset about something, ain't no mediation, ain't no talking about it, ain't no sticking around, waiting around. These young ones, she was like, just if they in their 20s, they out of here. You know what I'm saying? Whereas other employees are staying a little bit longer, and she can also see it in hiring patterns of the places they worked even before they got to her. It's like, this is the pattern, the habit, the way that we are, that generation, the Gen Z is what they're called, is approaching that. I also saw, I follow What's Trending. It's just called What's Trending. It's a pretty interesting
on Twitter
profile on Twitter. Instagram, actually, on Instagram. What's Trending. And they probably got a Twitter too. But I saw a screenshot from a Dollar Tree that said, it's a sign on the door. Dollar Tree in Indiana. That says, and this is on 420, I apologize for us closing again. My two new cashiers quit because I said their boyfriends can't stand here for their entire shift. Don't hire Gen Z. They don't know what work actually means. Now hiring baby boomers only. Thanks. Right? That was what the sign said. So that's kind of what is inspiring my mindset. And where I met with this conversation, and we're gonna get to breaking down some of those issues in labor and work and stuff like that in a minute.
Damn, they said forget all the rest of them. We ain't got no forget Gen X, forget millennials. Look, we only hiring boomers because them of them. Damn.
And so I think that brings us to an interesting place. Dina's in the comments right now. I'm a recruiting manager, and it's hard to keep employees right now because younger new hires are just difficult to work with. So I get, before we even get into that specific part. What era? So we are millennials, right? We all identify as millennials. I know, plug, you're a little old.
We're all millennials for sure.
Okay, because I know I'm a little older, so I don't know if you're in the generation before that or whether you're in the generation. Old people, man, you know what I'm saying? Trying to be mindful of the elders on the show. Yeah, I'm coming at his neck. He don't even care.
He too old to realize it, man.
We know, okay, so I guess there are a bunch of different eras. Lee, do you have something pulled up about the different generations and different eras?
I got you helped out, man. So what has started my hunch on this blew my mind. I learned that it was a generation called the Lost Generation that started in 1890 to 1915, and it's kind of like one of the longest generations, 25 years. Then you got the interbellum generation, the 1901 and 1913. And then you got the greatest generation, 1910 and 1924. The greatest generation, how I think about it, that's everybody that was like doing shit during the Gilded Age. You know what I'm saying? That they try to, do that and the other. I could be wrong on that. You can look it up. The silent generation is 1925 to 1945. And then the rest of these generations is the generations that's more prevalent in our voting, more prevalent in, all of people in power and shit that's going on. Baby boomers, 1946 to 1964. Then you have Generation X.
Most of our parents, too, because y'all parent, my mom is a baby boomer.
No, my mom and my daddy, Generation X.
Okay.
1974. Shout out to Generation X. I think I feel like Generation X is the generation that we usually forget about when it comes to generation beefs. You know what I'm saying? When you think about millennials, Zers and baby boomers, but we don't ever really think about Generation X. You know what I'm saying?
Generation X is our parents and Generation Y's grandparents.
Yeah,
it depends. I think it depends on how old you. Because my mama is older, but my brother and my sister, my siblings are generation.
Our Generation X. Like you said, your mama is older.
Mama OG. Yeah, I came 13 years late as a surprise, so my generation just kind of slid. We opened up the generations because I was not supposed to be around.
Then you got the exennials. You know what I'm saying? 1975 to 1985. And this right here got the exennials is a sub generation because they also cross over because the 1985 also cross over with the millennials from 1980 to 1994. Then you got Gen Z from 1995 to 2012. Then you got Gen Alpha from 2013 to 2025.
These new kids. So we broke it down, kind of era by era. And I think it's important if y'all in the comments, I want to assume what area y'all in. I know we definitely be having a whole bunch of different people repping generations. So this is the time to rep your gen. If you in the comments, Gen X, talk like boomers. Why you say that? Maximum Tata. Why you say that? Gen X talks like boomers. I wanna hear the breakdown on that. But my question to y'all, considering these generations, is what era, what generation, if you could, and this is without all the baggage, right? So I know sometimes when white people ask this question, like, what decade could you, if you could be born in any era? And we like,
man, we got
like,
some, yeah, hey man, we got it all around. We got people in 1980.
It's a lot of, 67, it's a lot of different diversity in the comments.
87. Shout out to my question is,
without all that baggage, think about a black person in the black world. Think about black culture, black society, black realities. If you could grow up in any era or any generation, including the one that's in, if you would just stay, what era would that be? What generation would that be? I'll repeat the question. Baggage aside, let's pretend this is a black ass world and we're not worried about all the whiteness and the weirdness that makes our realities a little bit more difficult than it had to be. In your own black ass world and your black ass mind, if you can pick another generation or your own to be a part of, which one would you choose?
Listen, I'm not gonna lie. I'm gonna go first on this one. Hold on, George. I'm gonna go first. Listen, my reasons are gonna be superficial. And I apologize if y'all make fun of me from the get-go, but it would have been the 80s because I would have wanted to fall in love with the type of music that came out in the 80s. Like it was a weird mix of like some ghetto shit, like some really sweet ballads. Like the new Jack Swing era of music. Listen, you got that side of it, but then to have like survived the 80s. Survived the 80s. That's a salute. Like my mom, like she came up out of the era, and I don't put my mama on blast. Like my mama was the traditional drug dealer girlfriend. I'm probably gonna write a book on her life. No bullshit. Like I'm probably gonna write a book on her life because like
drug dealer girlfriend.
She had the Mary J. Blige haircut, the bamboo earrings. She was light skinned. The whole shebang, right? So one, being able to just like the culture of the 80s was dope, but then like even surviving the 80s, like would have been, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like I wouldn't mind being an old man in like, you know, 2020, like, well, y'all got to say, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Instead of being a millennial, being like, fuck, like I missed all that shit. With all of this shit.
I feel like I would love to be the age I am now. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like maybe like late 20s, early 30s, and like the late 90s, early 2000s. You feel me? That era right there, I would love to be an adult in that time right there. Let me be a part of the new bringing in to web 2.0, the .com boom, goddamn, yeah. All this entrepreneur. I would have loved to be the age I am now at that time. In like the early 2000s, late 90s, like
wearing them big ass jeans and their white tees.
That's how I feel. Like, let me be an adult, and you feel me? Back when we was lean with it and rocking with it, instead of me being in like middle school, high school, let me have been an adult in that time with the same mindset that I have right now. Oof, man.
Hey,
yeah, you know, like we were kids, cause we were kids, right? Like we were like when we were doing the lean with it, rock with it. You said you was in middle school.
I was in ninth grade.
Like right, you was eighth grade, ninth grade. We was a little bit older, so I guess I was a little bit old. That was when I started. You know what I'm saying? Like I lived that. You feel me? So like, yeah, that was my shit. Go ahead.
I want to be adult when this thing came out.
You said what?
Like 03, like I'm talking about 03, 98, 99, between like 96, like 97 to like 04. Let me have been an adult in that time.
And definitely ain't no ageism going on in these comments. Ain't no ageism coming from us. It's love day every in our generation. Everybody got their little idiosyncrasies and stuff. They got weird going on with their generation. So for sure. We asked Maximus Tatao a question, the comparisons between Gen X and boomers, and the reason why he said a lot of them are being mistaken for boomers is that they do kind of have some of the same talking points, the same ideas, which gets to something we're gonna get where it's like the boundaries of generations are kind of weird, right? They should be a little bit more flexible and permeable than what they are, because there's a lot more people with connections and overlap and understandings about the world that are being grouped with the wrong people in their generations. But that's a conversation we'll have in a second. I would say,
can I interrupt real quick? So Queen Alana want to make sure that we all recognize that a Black autistic child was attacked by law enforcement in a local Target last week. If you don't mind, Queen Alana, put where that local Target was. So if people want to hear more about this story, we want to give them access to that. But police have given no reason as to why he was assaulted and tackled to the ground. He was not charged with the crime. While the boy was being attacked, his teenage sister tried to intervene on his behalf. Police then assaulted her and proceeded to charge her with felony assault for attempting to save her brother. In the days that followed, police from multiple jurisdictions targeted the family and so I'm saying that, that there's more to this story though, but if you can put where this took, like, and what Target this took place, so people can actually look up this story and find and you know, get more information on this, then we would greatly appreciate it. But we thank you for sharing that, because again, we a media outlet, so we want to make sure these stories get the proper attention. But yeah, if you could put in what local Target this was, so we can have all the information to get to find more about it, we appreciate that. Go ahead, Toya.
It's saying Lauren said it's the Clifton Park Target. The Clifton Park Target. So if that gives you a little bit more context into where this is happening, going down it. A couple more housekeeping things. Maximum Tatao, I feel like I misgendered you. I'm sorry. Maximum Tatao said, I'm a lady. So my bad if I said or assert or assumed anything else outside of it. I'll be trying not to gender anybody in the comments because I don't know.
Is Maximum masculine?
It's
bad. And when you look closer to the picture, I think I see what looks like a thin person with an afro.
Definitely a lady with an afro.
Sorry. Also,
you had a whole baby fro. You had a whole baby fro. You don't even recognize that.
I'm ashamed. Also, Asian characters. I don't know which language that's in or what it says, but we love you too. Thank you so much for popping in. We ain't never gonna miss a comment where somebody showing love, even though I don't know what your name is. For me, if I could pick a generation as an adult to grow up in, I would definitely want to be an adult.
In the 70s?
Nah, not even that. I think, honestly, Lee, I would be an adult with you, like, right at the cusp of, in the late 90s, early 2000s. The reason why is that, man, I feel like so much shit that we got is the watered-down version of shit that they got that was really cool. Like, we got cell phones, and we got shit that, like, over-connected us to made it too easy, and so we started getting overly connected to cell phones and missing experiences, but the generation before us had pagers. Boop, boop, boop. I know you need me. I know you want me. You know what I'm saying? When I get to the phone, when I make my, it's a priority, but it's not itching so bad on me that I'm missing the moment that I'm in right now. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like it was like a lighter version of that. You know what else is something that I wish I was like younger for that generation? Enjoying shit like the club. I have no idea what it looks like to enjoy it. I do. I'm lying. College years in the club was lit. By the time we got out of college,
it wasn't the era we live in now. It was the walk it out generation. I went to college
in Central Kansas with a whole bunch of Texans, so it was a lot of stanky legging, it was a lot of flexing, it was a lot of great times.
You went to college, Oklahoma.
You know, so I didn't miss all of that. I just wish I was like grown and able to stay out till like 3 o'clock in the morning. With that, stay out, you know what I'm saying, like kind of kick it, chill, whatever, run around and really have an appreciation for kickbacks, have an appreciation for concerts, have an appreciation for things that I feel like our generation kind of took and lost the essence of a little bit, and so it kind of got weird. Grace said, let me give y'all some real knowledge, and I want to respect this because she said 1964, I think, was when she was born. So we got some wisdom coming in. She says, every 40 years is a generation according to the Most High God. It is stated in the Bible. This is why the made up labels were red. That were red didn't make out. That don't make sense. Hey, however you decide that your breakup happens, and that's up to you. I think to be more specific, when we talk about generations, this is some research that we did. The ways that they kind of develop these different indications of generations are based on things like, let me look. How are generations determined? One is by technology. right? Which is, of course, a key component to understanding the ebbs and flows of generations. Another is economics. And then another important influential component that they think about is the approach toward parenting, right? How do we orient ourselves toward developing new generations? What do we have to give children as they become the new adults that are going to lead and guide generations, thus kind of shaping some of the influential characteristics of how we get from one generation to the next. Next question, now that we know where we would prefer to be, if not in the generation we were born in, is which generation do you feel like gets the worst rap? You know, we got boomer, you know, that was a big thing. You know, that's a big insult. That's a dig. You know, Gen Z get talked about all the time because of the Tide Pod. I ain't never going to live that down. And a bunch of other weird decisions that y'all have made over time. Millennials are considered to be raising.
We are untouchable. Millennials versus everybody. Stop playing.
Millennials are
in the world now.
Millennials are perceived to be. Let me finish breaking down kind of the different perceptions so we can get a good idea about this. Millennials are perceived to be lazy, entitled, don't want to do nothing, want everything handed to them. I think George talked about, Lee talked about the participation awards that we have been associated with. Gen X, I think we're kind of what
crack pandemic, goddamn, welfare queens.
That's what I'm riding with. Generation X get it the worst. Generation X get it the worst.
And then you just got, I mean, you have, of course, the silent generation, all of those older generations just kind of being disconnected. Those are the people running the country right now. Those are the people making a lot of the important decisions. So a lot of people say they're out of touch, they're out of tune, they got a lot of principles, morals, and ethics that don't really align with real life in a lot of ways. So a lot of hating going on, but which generation do you feel like deserves a little bit more credit or gets a whole lot of unnecessary hate that is not really deserved for them? What y'all
think? I think Gen Z, the young generation.
Right? Why? Because Takira says it, Tahiri says the same thing. But why do you say Gen Z?
I say Gen Z. Like literally, the reason why we having this conversation because homegirl was like, "Man, these young folks, this, that, and the other." In my mind, thinking about it, like, man, when I was in my 20s, all the people I was around was goddamn quitting their jobs and moving jobs like musical chairs too. And that's the reason why the old folks was talking shit about us. They say, you young people don't know how to hold down a job and da 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 da.